I preach, my dear friends, you're about to receive on John Barleycorn, nicotine, the temptations I've eve.
Now congratulate yourself, for you have just made a lovely bechamel sauce. You didn't know you had it in you, did you? Well, neither did I.
Fred, if you're real, you better tell me right now! If you're real, you better tell me right now!
Contaminated.
You don't even know what that word means.
Sometimes it sets my teeth on edge. Other times it helps me control the chaos.
Coffin Cats, for blood.
Original all horror broadcast.
Now brace yourself as we take you across the threshold of our haunted mansion, where there's a ghost for everyone in the family. Father, mother, sister, brother,
and one for you. Welcome to Remark Radio, fiends. I'm your host, as always, Tomb Dragomir.
Hey.
What's the deal here anyway?
Cool it. You'll find out soon enough, Super Fats.
Yeah, Super Fats, cool it. This week on the broadcast. On the broadcast.
I mean, it's about, I mean, who knows? It's coming out in France next week. It's going to, and I mean, I spoke to some French journalists and they were like, holy shit, or sacre bleu.
Director of Rogue and Wolf Creek, Aussie filmmaker Greg McLean returns this week. He'll cut your tits off. Our blood spattered guide digs up some weird Halloween polka tunes with Renée Chevalier's Pocahontas.
Everyone loves their spooky stories. By the time we were finished, I was thinking, I'm going to have to do a record every year because these stories never end and there's so many great ones.
And the Caustic Critics taking on, is this right? Masters of Horror? Come on! Aw, oh, man, I give up. I'm out of here.
Sorry, Rudy.
I'm not sure you realize what you have here, Mr. Franks. This single sheet of paper could entirely rewrite the history of our country.
Terror Tunes on Route this week. It's Creature Feature, Anima Morte, The Rabies, Scream and Lord Such, Alan Silvestri, and tons more fun street to come streets. Yeah, this is Rewark Radio. Tune in, turn on, drop dead. Let's go with Alice Cooper. Catch me if you can.
She was not the first. He won't be my last. My hunger and my thirst, my brilliant future and my ugly past. They'll all be here with me until my web is spun. My blessing and my curse, there'll be no rest until my
roba la cartera a un delincuente. Ella no está sola, solo está caliente. Tiene una tumba. arriba, ella está muy lenta. Buscan un trabajo, le dice una vieja, ella saca un cuchillo y la despelleja. Viste más decente, le dice la gente, y ella la sembra, se usa la corta en la frente. Ya no quedan cerebros ni en la carnicería, con la ayuda de todos fue el horror de la varía. Ya no quedan vivos, ya no queda gente, ahora solo hay sitio para los vivos murientes. Tenemos una tumba al lado del cementerio, como no estamos muertos, nadie nos quiere dentro. Salimos y bebemos para olvidar esta vida, tan lenta y podrida, tan lenta y podrida.
Of 30 Days of Night and the Grudge movies comes Ghost House Underground. Eight cutting-edge horror films handpicked by the most trusted names in horror. Ghost House Underground. Grab all eight films on DVD October 14th.
This is Melantha Blackthorne at the Festival of Fear 2008, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
So first of all, what is the state of the Church of Satan?
I was going to ask you about Wes Craven, and now I'm ashamed to.
Les Messman style.
Possibly the Antichrist.
Like a zombie character on Sesame Street. All of a sudden it seems so irrelevant. Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
All right, this is Feedback with part two of my interview with Australian filmmaker Greg McLean, director of the outstanding Croc Run Amok creature feature Rogue, currently on DVD through Dimension Extreme. Now, there's a whole section of the film where you're shooting in the Northern Territories where you actually go to places where there are saltwater crocodiles, and in some instances you have your actors. They have to go into the water where potentially there is a real crocodile there.
It's true. It sounds kind of crazy, but we were shooting for probably 4 weeks in a place called Yellow Waters Billabong, which is this incredible natural wildlife reserve. And it's where people go to, I mean, every single day there is basically, you know, dozens of tour boats that go out. In fact, that's actually where the idea for the tour boat came from. I actually took one of these cruises about 7 years ago. And it was like, wow, this is like, this would be great in a movie. This is like such a great setup. And, you know, this place is, you know, wall to wall with huge saltwater crocodiles. And the crocodiles aren't scared of the boats because I see them every day, so they come up there. So when we went to shoot the film, we basically went to that location and then put our hero boat with all the actors into that boat and then all the camera boats around it. So we were this floating armada of kind of crazy people dropping these cameras really close to the water and had the cameras on cranes. And it was kind of, I mean, you know, I'm amazed that someone didn't get killed by a crocodile. We did have a guy with a huge gun. We had a national park ranger there with a large, you know, .303 rifle ready to, you know, ready to rescue someone if someone got grabbed.
Now, one of the great things about the film is very much how Ray Harryhausen has commented on CG, that he thinks it's a great tool, but it's not the only tool. You approach the creature effects by combining all sorts of really interesting practical effects and animatronics with the CG. And it's got that great effect on an audience where you're looking at it and you're never quite sure what the effect is. I mean, it's quite baffling in that regard. So could you talk about the challenge of bringing all these different techniques together to sell the effect of the crocodile?
I think, since movies like Lord of the Rings and King Kong and things like that, the audience is basically trained to, their level of what they think is real is changing all the time. So doing a film where we knew we were going to have a full-on fight, you know, on-screen fight sequence with the crocodile, those kind of movies were a reference point, saying, well, if it's been done that realistically in that film, you can't really then cheat the audience and kind of have them go, oh, that looks fake. So we spent probably, you know, 5-6 months just doing animatics and storyboarding that sequence, and any time the croc was on screen, then we had the animators actually go to a crocodile farm in Northern Territory and spend a couple of weeks just looking at how big crocodiles move. You know, we're really obsessive about making it realistic because we thought, you know, this film will totally fail if you kind of don't totally believe in the creature. And I think that kind of simplicity and that kind of being hard on ourselves about the effects really make the crocodile look really it looks and behaves in a really realistic way, which I think is great because you're kind of like, you're aware of the character dealing with it with an animal, behaving like an animal. In fact, in the sense it actually has its own motivation.
I thought you said crocs wouldn't attack a boat.
Right, they're territorial animals, so if we've stumbled into one's territory, it's possible it might have given us a little nudge just to let us know we're not wanted.
A little nudge.
Your first feature, Wolf Creek, certainly did not require the technical sophistication of Rogue. So what was it like for you to step into this big special effects extravaganza world? Was it daunting? Was it intimidating at any point?
It not really, because this is the kind of film I've always really loved looking at. I've kind of been studying this stuff for a long time and kind of preparing myself. And I've always wanted to kind of get into more kind of visual effects films because, you know, I'm a Star Wars kid and I love all those kind of movies. So I've been thinking about it and looking at it and doing it in commercials for some time. The one thing that did kind of frighten me a little bit was when we were shooting that big finale with the big CG crocodile sequence, I think there's probably like 450, there's a lot of shots in that sequence, and we had the sound stage with our set, and then we had out the front of that all of our monitors for all the different cameras, and then I had my big storyboard with each of the frames printed out on the storyboard. And so we would go in there and we said, okay, we've got 3 weeks to shoot all this material. And then every time we'd complete a shot, we would mark it off the board. And then I think it was like probably the end of week one when I went back to the board and I'd still only done about 5 shots. My mind went to the Lord of the Rings films or the Star Wars, this and Star Wars films, thinking, how the hell do you do that stuff? I mean, it's obviously, hopefully one day I'll get a chance to do that scale of movie, but I just thought, my God, the level of information you must have to go into your brain to do like one of those giant sequences is just crazy.
Oh my God.
Where the hell did he go?
Oh my God.
Somebody do something! Everett! 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 Everett!
Stand back.
No!
Come back.
You get the fuck away from
come
me!
Back. Come back. All of you,
Everett!
Stay away from the water!
Everett!
Jesus.
I want to just reiterate once again, I mean, all this innovation and the fucking Weinstein stick it on DVD. It's so unbelievable. It really is. Well, listen, if you ever visit Toronto, we'll have to dig up a print of Rogue to show to Toronto audiences.
I've actually got my own print. I'll bring my own print over. We'll do a little travelling roadshow.
Yeah, we'll correct the wrong. And we'll
right.
at least be able to bring it to a Toronto audience in 35mm. Finally, I got to ask you, will there be a sequel?
Will there be a sequel? I actually have a great idea for a sequel. But I don't know whether I'll be getting financed out of Weinstein's because I don't know. They're funny old fellows.
Here's a good idea. Rogue 2, Crocodile Dundee Strikes Back.
I love it. What about Rogue 2? It's the brothers Weinstein. It's two American film financiers who go on a river cruise and they get attacked by a huge saltwater crocodile.
And it never has to eat again for another year. For more information about Rogue, visit the website at www.dimensionextreme.com.
And now, the almost true story of the legendary brothers Weinstein. Once upon a time, in faraway England, there lived two brothers, Harvey and Bob.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we've got everything we need to start a movie company. What are we going to call it? How about Paramount Pictures? Already taken. Strap on your brain, Bob. I got it. Metro-Goldwyn-Weinstein.
Saltwater crocodile. It's probably the most dangerous member of the crocodilian family.
Oh, yeah? You want a piece of me?
And the rest is Miramax history.
History indeed. Yes, those wacky Weinsteins, what zany schemes will they be up to next? Lots more to come here on Rumored Radio. Stay with us. We got the blood-spattered guy, haunted polka music, new tune from the Rabies, and some screaming Lord Sutch, all black and hairy.
All black and hairy, how scary.
On the Mighty Morgue, let's go.
Last night I was digging in the cemetery. Up jumps a man, all black and hairy. Well, he looked at me with his beady red eyes, and I'm telling you, I got quite a surprise. As I looked at him, my legs turned to lead as the monster reared his ugly head.
The Ghostly Hand of Spital House. George Alderson owned the English inn called Spital House some 200 years ago. It perched high on Stainmore in Yorkshire's North Riding. What with iron bars at the windows, walls a foot thick, and steep stone steps leading to the oak door, chained and bolted inside, Spital House looked more like a fortress than an inn. One stormy night in October, the innkeeper and his son Bob sat cleaning their hunting knives and firearms before the blazing logs of the hearth. Up here on the moors, a man must be prepared for everything, remarked George Alderson, rubbing the shining blade of a knife on his sleeve. Aye, the master is right, declared the little maidservant Bella, glancing from the pot she was stirring to Mistress Alderson, busy at her spinning wheel. 'Tis nights like this, when winds howl and the rains beat, that evil men crawl from their holes.
Mothers, hide your babies. Here's the rabies. Ghost in the graveyard.
This day, Spital House stands high on Stainmore. On cold nights in October, winds still tear at the ancient tiles on the roof. Rain rattles the window panes. Yet since Bella routed the highwaymen close to 200 years ago, there's never been a robber bold enough to steal treasure from the cupboard of the old hostelry.
Hi, I'm Count Spokula, and you, on the go, are listening to Rumorg Radio!
The night is my domain.
Hello, I'm Lisa LaDouceur, your blood-spattered guide to music on Rumorg Radio. It's officially Halloween music season around here, and over the next month we'll be playing lots of your spooky Halloween favorites, but always want to dig around for new and interesting things, and we got this note in our inbox. We had to pursue a new collection in time for Halloween of polka music. Now, the last time we had an accordion player on the segment here, things got a little bit out of control.
Now, truly in Smokesylvania, when that rockabilly sound hit Glip Smokesylvania in about 1500 or something or other, the people went completely wild. It got it in their jeans, and they got reborn in the 50s, and it went back into their jeans, but now their jeans were blue, and they was playing rock and roll and rockabilly and psychabilly like you wouldn't believe it.
Thankfully, Veronique Chevalier is a French-American cabaret singer. She doesn't play the accordion, but she hired musicians to do that and more on an album called Polka Hauntus. It is Halloween music. It is also polka. I called her in California to find out why.
Hello.
Veronique, thank you for joining us on Rumorg Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us about your unique Halloween CD.
Well, Polka Hauntus is a spooktacular compilation of 13 spooky polkas based on ghostly legends from various regions around the world. And what we've done is taken polka and combined it with whatever indigenous musical form is found corresponding to that tale. So, for instance, we did the White Witch of Jamaica, so we have combined polka and reggae.
How did you become interested in this project? Have you always liked polka? Have you always liked Halloween and novelty music?
First and foremost, I am one quarter Polish, so I am eminently qualified to do polka. And number two, I grew up traveling all over the world. My father was in the service, and he specifically was in radio. He used to record all kinds of genres of music on reel-to-reel tapes and bring them home. So I literally grew up with like any kind of music you can name. And coupled with traveling around the world and having gone to 13 different schools, how appropriate is that to do 13 spooky polkas?
13 ghosts materializing in ectoplasmic color through the magic of Illusiono. You'll feel all the thrills and chills of seeing one ghost multiplied by the magic number 13.
Tell me about some of the legends that you encountered when you were researching Halloween and the different cultures around the world. Was there something surprising that you didn't know before?
Well, one thing I've just been very excited about is overwhelming array of stories from all different cultures. That's definitely a connecting thread through every society that I've been able to find, is that everyone loves their spooky stories. And one thing I thought was, oh, I'll never find enough good stories to do this record. And by the time we were finished, I was thinking, I'm going to have to do a record every year because these stories never end and there's so many great ones.
There's a lot of humor on this record, a lot of laughs. I like the song Beer Hall from Hell, for example.
In hell, the beer is flat. You'll soon get used to that. No bubbles in your glass, just passing sulfur gas. In hell, it's quite a brew that they will serve to you. It's made in giant vats with warts and wings of bats. In the beer hall. hall in hell. I hear tell that it's swell in the beer hall in hell. The boys are really hot. Come, dear, and rest a spell in the beer hall in hell. Hey, there's no last call in hell. And ya polka till ya drop.
But some of them are more serious. And tell us about the Canadian story on the record. Tell us about Ghost Train.
It's actually very tragic. It's based on fatal train wreck in the early 1900s on the Alberta line near Medicine Hat. And this particular story was compelling because it wasn't just about a ghost, one apparition, but it was actually a train, and its occupants were all ghostly and demonic, and it seemed very frightening and very vivid to me, so I had to include it.
Well, I think that being spooky Canadians, that's the song we'll have to spin, and we'll play it for the ghosts of the people who died on the ghost train. How about that?
Very good.
All right. Thank you again for joining us, Veronique. We look forward to Pocahontas and Pocahontas Volume 2.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. It's been a great pleasure.
From the new CD, Pocahontas, by Veronique Chevalier and friends, this is Ghost Train on Rue Morgue Radio.
I was a railway man back in 1908 on the Alberta line, earning a decent wage. Jim Toohey was my buddy. Man, he could drive a train, but neither of us could foresee that fateful night in May. The sky was pine tar dark, Medicine Hat was up ahead. Our nerves were suddenly jarred by a vision full of dread. Headlong out of nowhere and gaining on us fast. It was a blazing nightmare of the ghost train set to crash. Look out all you train men on the darkest of nights for the deadly ghost train with evil red devil lights. Watch out all you train men, it's later than you think. That demon-driven ghost train could take your life in a blink. Luckily the ghost train has spared our lives that night, but the memories long remained of that godforsaken fright. For a time we worked the yard, but Jim, he missed the tracks. Not one for being guarded, no ghost would hold him back. One long hot night that summer, in the cab was Jim. On the silver Spokane Flyer, he was taking a spin. Saw the ghost train was full steam round Medicine Hat. The two trains crashed and Jim plus six men laid flat. Look out all you train men on the darkest of nights for the deadly ghost train with evil red devil lights. Watch out all you train men, it's later than you think. That demon-driven ghost train could take your life in a blink. Watch out all
Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
Sequel. No! Don't you blame the movies! Movies don't create psychos! Movies make psychos more creative!
I'm a Billy Wood, you alright? Take any more. I'm feeling woozy here.
Now, I've often said good news when sending you on a mission of extreme danger. So when I say this anomaly is dangerous, you can imagine how dangerous I really think it is.
Not dangerous at all?
Actually, quite dangerous indeed.
That is quite dangerous.
Indeed. Now stop shilly-shallying. Prep the ship and line up for your pre-flight coffee enemas.
Warning, the enema you are about to enjoy is extremely hot.
I did find something in my grandmother's house.
There might be something there worth more than the unexperienced eye can see. I'm not sure you realize what you have here, Mr. Franks. This letter could forever change the image we have of George Washington. You want this knowledge to be known?
Daddy, do you want to come in?
This is
Toby Hooper. I'm here at the 2008 Festival of Fear, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
The Caustic Critic.
Controversial. Unrelenting. It's brutal. It's nasty.
Sensational.
The worst of the worst.
Offend everyone equally.
Bowling.
They're real.
The stuff shit scrapes off the bottom of its shoes.
They're mean.
So what was the actor's name?
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
They're here.
Are you ready? It's time for the Caustic Critic.
They're here.
All right, this is feedback.
And this is a gourmet.
Now, first of all, I want to apologize to Toon Bregamy, because he's going to kill me when he finds out what we're reviewing this week.
You're stewed, buttwad!
Yes, we're going down the rabbit hole once again into the dark pits of a world I promised not only Toon, but the Rue Morgue Radio listeners that we would never visit again, and that is Masters of Horror Season 2. Which just came out in its entire collection in this fucking cool skull box set. What do you think of this?
That's a wicked set. And you know, I can't talk about Masters of Horror without getting myself into the same frame of mind I was in when it was originally broadcast. Because for me, it was a weekly ritual. The only way I could shoehorn my wife off the couch was Masters of Horror. I'd sit down and crack a beer. I look forward to every week. And I enjoyed the whole thing overall.
And I gotta thank the gourmet because he's brought these wonderful premium Pilsner fucking cans of something. What the hell is this shit? What is it?
Warsteiner.
Warsteiner. All right, man. Cheers. Clink. All right, first of all, let's talk about this box set quickly. I have mixed feelings about it. It's a skull. The top of the skull opens up. I mean, that's cool.
That looks wicked.
But then, what you have is 13 episodes squeezed onto 11 discs. Now, some of them are printed like proper DVDs, the way they would have been packaged in the standalone releases. And then you have these weird, like, double-sided, unprinted DVDs mixed in there.
I'm starting to have a problem with specialty packaging. You know, as my collection has grown to, like, 900 DVDs, I don't have space for shit like this anymore. Where do you put it?
But you know what's good about this? Getting this Season 2 complete box set afforded me the opportunity to finally see the few remaining episodes that I didn't see. And there's a couple that are really worth talking about. Beginning with The Washingtonians by Peter Medak. Now, I got to say something. There are certain titles that have come out in recent years that have created a deepening, widening enmity, eternal enmity between me and not just some of the Rue Morgue Radio frequent co-hosts that come on, but the entire fucking staff at Rue Morgue Magazine. And The Washingtonians is one of them. When I came in here today and told Rodrigo Godinho that I thought this was one of the best episodes of Season 2, he went on the fucking intercom, told the entire office, and all I heard was like this. The minions rose up, you know what I mean, with belts of derisive laughter.
And that this person has defalsed and blasphemed against God and has committed sacrilege under the eyes of our crucified Lord.
Teach him a lesson.
He doesn't look so horny now.
Call the it minions. The boss. All right, I got your back, dude. I totally got
the
your back.
The Washingtonians was fantastic, actually, and I'll tell you why. History is written by the winners. It's a known fact. So if you want the George Washington History of America, pick up any fucking textbook, you know, that they would use in an American high school. If you want the real history of somebody like George Washington, pick up something like Howard Zinn's People's History of America.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
George Washington was a motherfucker. He fondled his slaves. He was a warmonger. He bred a climate of fear. People were terrified to speak out against him for fear of being hanged or killed. He made George W. Bush look like Pee Wee Herman. This is the real history
what?
Of America.
He couldn't tell a lie, and he's like Santa Claus for Americans.
Exactly.
George Washington was the father of our country. I mean, he chopped up cherry trees.
not the arms and legs of children.
George Washington has been recast as this benevolent father figure of America, a cherry-chopping chone.
George Washington was a cannibal, Michael. He was a fiend murderer, a child eater. He was also chosen to be father of our country, and that image was more important than the actuality.
He owned slaves?
Slave owner, enthusiastic slave fondler. And that's what's great about Peter Medak's The Washingtonians. It drives a nail into the mythology of American culture.
George Washington was not the gentle, kind old man who put him up to me. He was a monster.
In this episode, George Washington was really a cannibal who feasted on human flesh and made utensils out of human bones. And
of children!
Of children.
Children's bones! He made little forks!
He had a particular fondness for virgin flesh. Now, admittedly, the episode is broadly satirical and very comedic. Personally, I thought the comedic elements worked very well. The horror is played straight. It's really fucking grisly. I thought the makeup effects were a notch above what they usually are in this episode. The main actor is a bit wooden, but I mean, that's what you expect with Masters of Horror. You need your ubiquitous plank in the episodes. But the supporting cast, the people who play this...
Old people have never been creepier.
Hey, where's the meat?
It's a phenomenal episode. It's one of the most subversive entries in the entire Masters of Horror series. It's basically season 2's answer to what Joe Dante did with Homecoming in season 1.
Except the episode was actually good.
It was a better episode. It's a lot of fun, you know. I mean, what can I say? Do I need to defend this? This is where I now need the Rumorg Radio listeners to come out and tell me, are you with me or are you against me?
I will skin your children and eat them. Upon finishing, I will fashion utensils out of their bones.
As your lovable George W. Bush is fond of saying, you're either with me or you're against me. If you're against me, preemptive strikes across the board. Spare nobody. The other thing I will say about season 2, and I think we agree on this, it is better than season 1.
Yes. I'd go so far as saying that there was only one episode that was lame. Overall,
oh no,
I enjoyed the entire series.
Oh, man. Gourmet, one episode?
I can find merits in each and every one, except the last one. Death Cruise. Holy shit. Has anybody in North America not seen a movie with a long-haired wet ghost?
Dream Cruise.
Dream Cruise? Did I say Death Cruise? Yeah. That's probably because I wish I was dead by the end of it. Jeez. Duh.
4 years since we got married. My Yuri is my most treasured thing. Thou shalt not commit adultery, right, Jack? You know what happens to people who do.
So he knows about us.
I wonder. That's strange. We should see the shore by now.
The pacing of this episode.
It's dreadful in an hour. It's slow and it's nothing you have not seen. If you've seen Ring, either version, there's no reason to watch this whatsoever.
And you know how these Caustic Critic segments start out with that little montage where you hear me saying what a plank he is? That was me commenting on somebody from Masters of Horror from season 1. The plank of all fucking planks, the mayor of Plank City, is a fella named Daniel Gillis. All right, he's the main actor in the Dream Cruise.
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
My girlfriend and I, honestly, we were in hysterics watching this fucking show. Fast-forwarding, rewinding, freeze-framing. He does a couple of, like, bizarre moves where he gets hit and has to fall to the floor. They're some of the most unbelievably pathetic attempts at acting ever put on any kind of screen. Small, big, you name it.
My name is Daniel Gillies, and I played Jack.
And I'm Mick Garris, executive producer.
Yeah, it sucked.
It's clear that the director, Japanese filmmaker Norio Serrata, has no concept at all of how to block his actors. Or at least, I don't know, if there was a language problem or if he couldn't communicate, I don't know what the fuck was going on, but these people are literally walking around for an hour and a half on a fucking boat, not knowing which way they're supposed to look. There's an amazing moment where the main actress has to look between a pile of blood on the floor and the actor's face, and she's like looked back and forth between the two of them about 400 times in the space of like 30 frames. It's like, honestly, I've never laughed so hard at ineptitude, at acting ineptitude in a film before.
Oh, I don't know, because you were shit on the View.
Well, you know what? I gotta stop you right there because we're actually completely out of time.
Time to pay the fiddler.
And we're gonna have to continue this next week, so apologies, Tomb. Apologies, listeners. Not only are we gonna talk about Masters of Horror this week, we're gonna do it again next week.
The accused number one, who committed sacrilege four times under the eyes of our Lord, shall have the four fingers of his right hand chopped off. Thereupon he shall be tarred and feathered and chased through the streets like an animal. Until he drops dead.
Ah, ah, ah. In the name of the Lord, have mercy! Ah!
Strip him. That way the women will enjoy it too.
Everybody sit down, quiet down, listen up. I brought you all here to recite the annual obituaries. Like every year, we'll start with A and we'll end with Z. All right, is the band ready?
Ready.
All right, hit it, Boyles.
A one and a two.
Creature feature, a gory demise.
Drown in a pool. B is for Billy who was eaten by ghoul. C is for Kurt with disease of the brain. D is for Daniel Durrell on a train. E is for Eric who's buried alive. F is for Frank who was stabbed through the eye. G is for Greg who died in the womb. H is for Heather who was sealed in a tomb.
One by one we bite the dust. Kick the bucket and begin to rust. Give up the ghost when your number's up. We all fall down. Ashes to ashes, bones to paste. You'll wither away in your resting place. Eternity in a wooden case. We all fall down.
I is for Isaac who lost his front brakes. J is for Johnny who was bitten by snakes. K is for Kimmy who was shot in the head. L is for Larry who bled and bled. N is for Marie who was burnt to a crisp. N is for Nick who was pummeled by fist. O is for Olive who lived like too. P is for Pat who swallowed some glass.
This concludes our danse macabre.
portions of the proceeding were recorded. As for the rest of it, I'm very much afraid it was all in your mind. I don't intend to indulge in any post-mortem. If you haven't been murdered, I can only say better luck next time. If you have been, good night, wherever you are.
You either with me or you're against me. If you're against me, preemptive strikes across the board. Spare nobody.
Damn right.
Old people have never been creepier.